Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, I finished my conversation with coding celebrity Victoria Moll of Contempo Coding. In the final part of our interview, Victoria and I discuss setting boundaries and how to achieve balance working as your own boss. Additionally, Victoria shares career advice for those desiring to take a similar path to hers, and she also reveals plans for her professional future. Together, Victoria and I also share some laughs discussing our most embarrassing moments. And now here is part three of my interview, Achieving Balance as a Solopreneur with Victoria Moll. Okay, so tell me, who has been the most influential person in your career or your most important professional mentor? I know we all have, I have a lot of different people who've mentored me and guided me. So maybe you have more than one, or maybe there's a primary one. So if you want to share, you know, maybe the main one, or if there are a couple different people who've helped you along, who would be those most important professionals in your life?
Yeah, it's funny. I've had people who have helped me in little pocketed ways across my entire career, but no one who was like a set mentor. I used to have one boss that I learned a lot of good lessons from, but was very micromanagey. So while I did learn some good stuff, it was very like, when I watched the movie Devil Wears Prada, I was just like crying because, wow, this is just like my job and how my boss used to be. So like, I was just like, this is upsetting to me. Like, I still probably can't watch that movie without crying a little bit. But honestly, the person who really pushed me to the level that I'm at now was Toni L. Holmes. We connected just incidentally through LinkedIn that she saw some kind of post I made because it came onto her feed because someone that she was connected with commented on it. It pulled into her feed and we wound up really striking it off. And behind the scenes, I would tell her, I'm like, I'm working this auditing job and they're making me do productivity auditing now. And I'm like, I just don't know, you know, how am I going to hit productivity numbers when they're also pulling me to do all this education and all this stuff? And I'm like, I just, you know, the YouTube channel's doing okay. And I just don't know about going off on my own. And she was really the one who kind of pushed me and was like, Victoria, what you're doing is amazing. And you can absolutely make a ton more money going out on your own. And it's going to be hard. And it's going to be one of the toughest things that you're going to do, but it's going to be so worth it because it's all you. And it's something you've built on your own. And she's like, you need to quit your job. Like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like very like, Victoria, you need to get out of there. You need to quit your job. She's like, I'll hire you if you want. Like you can come on my payroll. I'm like, you're sweet. But yeah. And she was really just incredibly supportive of me in so many ways. And we just clicked on a couple of personal things as well, which was nice. And just, it was also just nice to have someone to, I don't want to say confide in, but had that same kind of mindset that once you would see something going on in the industry, I'd be like, Toni, did you see this? And she's like, oh my God, I did.
Yeah.
And it was funny because she was just bringing it up the other day where she was like, oh, you remember when you were all ready and you were just about ready to go full time on your business, but then you found out that your company was going to give you a big bonus in a month. So I'm like, I waited until I literally had the bonus in my pocket and then was like, and now I'm resigning.
Good for you. I love Toni. She is one of my favorite people. You know, I got to meet her earlier this year face to face and we just like clicked. I mean, so much in common and just sat and like laughed and, you know, hopefully all of us can connect. So I know we've been talking about the November, you know, meetup. We'll talk about that maybe after the interview and see kind of what you have planned for there. But I mean, she's amazing and she has great advice and ideas and she's super fun. So I have a feeling if we got together our little like podcaster group, if we created our own little society, we could all have a lot of fun together because we have so many similarities. And then you can sit around and piss and moan about things to each other because you can completely relate. You know, Christine Hall, like Toni, is that for you? Christine Hall, me and her have become friends, you know, over the past year. And we're like that for each other. If something's frustrating, you know, one of us, we can talk to the other one about it. It doesn't go anywhere. And you can just kind of bounce things off of each other. So it's great to have someone.
And you know, it's not because you're just a super negative person. It's because you don't have anyone else to talk to about this stuff.
Right.
Like, I can't go to my best friend and be like, hey, did you see what so-and-so did on this coding thing? Like, She has no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they don't understand. I mean, I can talk to other friends to a certain degree, but they're not going to understand the situation that I'm describing to them. There's still people to this day who say, what do you do again? What exactly do you do? Like they don't fully comprehend it. So it's kind of hard to have those discussions about a professional issue with someone who doesn't work in the profession because we are like our own little unique club, I feel in a way. Like you medical coders, you know, trying to explain to non-medical coders what they do and how that works, that, you know, generally just doesn't go. Occasionally I do get it through to people and they understand it. But again, unless you're working in the field, it's very hard to relate to what we deal with on a daily basis there.
Right.
So what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue a career path that's similar to yours?
Similar to mine, you know, I think it's really served me well to not have that mentality of caring what other people think. Like that is, I think, one of the big hurdles that people still hold on to for some reason. And I guess I'm just fortunate enough that I was not programmed that way to care too much about, oh, you know, they're not going to like this and they're not going to like this. And what are people going to think? You know, go out there and do the thing. Don't worry if your coworkers are going to think, oh, well, who does Sally think she is that she's going to go work on this project or she wants to go be involved in this committee or in this meeting or get this credential. You know, do it for you. Do it because you know it's the right thing to do. At the end of the day, like those other people aren't the one putting food on your table or a roof over your head. Focus on, if I still do this, am I still going to have food on my table and a roof over my head? Yes. Okay. Then who the hell cares about what everyone else thinks about it? Because you're not going to go to your grave worrying about what the hell your coworkers thought or what the heck your boss thought about the rest of your career. I said, you don't want to go to, you know, your deathbed regretting all of the things that you could have done, but chose not to because of other people's opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. You just have to be you. You know, I've encountered a lot of people in my career, particularly when I was younger and like coming up. I was very accomplished at a very young age. I was like leaps and bounds ahead of people that were my same age. I mean, I was a corporate compliance officer at what, 25 years old, you know, or something like that. And then just even in the professional association, working my way up. And I just encountered a lot of people that, again, you're just being you. You're not trying to make other people look bad. You're just focused on being you and being the best you can be. And then some people, by doing that, by default, some people end up looking bad. They just do because they're not stepping up and doing what they need to do. So you can't let them pull you down and bring you down. And I've had a lot of that go on in my career. And you just have to ignore it and tune it out. My thought process is, I'm sorry that you don't like that I'm succeeding over here because it shows that you dropped the ball when you were supposed to be doing these things or you're not doing your part, but that's not my problem. I just have that strong work ethic. I'm very committed. I would always go above and beyond in anything that I did. And thankfully, I'm out of that rat race. I'm out of the politics. Having your own business, you don't need to deal with office politics and all those personalities. You know, you're shaking your head. Or if you get a client where you're just not gelling and it's not working, you can end that contract and move on. You're not stuck with that person. I've had clients where we both acknowledge, you know what, this isn't really what, you know, what I thought and what you thought, and let's just part ways. And Nobody's upset about it. We just make the decision that, you know, they're going to go a different direction. I'm going to go a different direction. And that's the way. So I love that freedom of just being able to stay away from all of that and just like be above it. So that's probably one of the biggest advantages, I think, of having your own business, is you control that. And I don't deal with any of that in my own company. Thank goodness. So that's been a definite blessing there. So, okay. So what is your favorite job that you've held? I mean, looking at what you do now, I have to assume that this is your most favorite thing that you've ever done, but is there something else that, yeah, you know, you've enjoyed more, or you finally arrived? This is your moment. This is what you want to do.
This is definitely it. And I love this job. That doesn't mean that my life is perfect and everything is wonderful 100% of the time. It is still a lot of work. But like I said, I work now at a different pace. I'm not one of those people who likes to run around with my pants on fire, typing frantically on my computer because I've got 100 emails and I need to answer them. And I've got a meeting coming in 5 minutes. I like not having a lot of stuff on my calendar. That in itself has come with a lot of difficulty because I am someone who needs structure. And even after I've been structured for a while, I need to change the structure because I got bored with the way things were structured. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to keep myself accountable. You know, I don't have someone over my head going, "Hey, Victoria, don't forget that you have to do this at this day." You know, it's all me. I have to put it on my calendar. I have to hold myself responsible. There's a lot of things that come up that I don't even know until I find out they're a problem. My payroll company has been an absolute nightmare because they dropped the ball on a bunch of forms that I didn't even know I needed to fill out. And they're like, "Yeah, you have to fill out. Where's your unemployment account or whatever?" And I'm like, "I don't know that's a thing. Why was this not involved when I was onboarded that you said these are the accounts numbers that we need?" Because you came after me like a month later and were like, "You need to fill out this form." And I'm like, "I don't know what this is. Can someone fill it out for me?" "Yeah, we can do it for you." And then sat on it for a while. And now I owe back taxes to the state and penalties because of crap you didn't do. And it's probably not even enough worthwhile to go and get a lawyer about and file in small claim court. So I'm just like, "Oh my God, if I ever hear one more thing from you people, just we're done." But this is, I love the creative outlook of it. And it's fascinating though. Sometimes it does, as I kind of alluded to, sometimes get lonely because there aren't a lot of people that do what I do or can talk to about some of the issues that I run into. I mean, sometimes from the business aspect, but when it's things like, you know, working with affiliates or problems with my camera settings, you know, it's harder to find someone who understands that sort of aspect of it. And it's interesting though, to see the different views that I think of me are out there. Like I've noticed recently that there's a lot of seminars, like not chapter seminars, but like paid seminars that people are doing. And they're like, you know, pulling all of this talent to put together this symposium or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not getting asked for any of these. Like no one's coming to me and asking me to speak.
Really?
And I don't know if it's because people are like, "Oh, well, Victoria does her own thing, so I'm not going to ask her to come into my company and speak as well, because maybe she might promote her thing and pull people." I don't know if it's because they think I'm so at the top tier that they're like, "Oh, I can't ask Victoria." I don't know if they just think of me as a youth. Like I genuinely have no idea why it is, but I never really thought
about that until you said that. And I'm like, you're right. Cause I've been a part of different things and I've been invited to be a part of things that are coming up next year. And you haven't been a part of like any of those.
No.
Yeah. I don't know why. You're very knowledgeable. Maybe I can find out. Maybe I can like put some feelers out there and ask some questions. Like, hey, is there a reason? Are we, you know, intentionally excluding Victoria, or do we just think she's snobby and
yeah, like,
she's not going to come join us?
I could make some guesses as to why, but they're just as good. They're just guesses. I genuinely have no idea why I don't get asked. I mean, sometimes I have been turning down a lot of speaking engagements lately, mm-hmm. only because it gets too intense. A lot of them are in the evenings, and that's my time to sit and have dinner with my family yeah. and connect with my kids. So, and then I also have board meetings and chapters. So it's like to have too much stuff in the evening, that really is not good for my work-life balance. And yeah. people have been kind of funny when I tell them about that. Like I've started telling people, like, I'm not taking any more speaking engagements for chapters for 2022. And they're like, oh, I hope you get better soon. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
That's funny.
I'm not sick. I'm just not doing it. Like, I just am saying no right now. You know, so there might be yeah. like pockets of them. Like if someone's like, hey, can you come and speak at our symposium or whatever on a Saturday? Like, oh, okay, then maybe I'll do that. But it's just trying to find that balance. I've had to say no to a lot of people. I think the social media thing, you know, I think some people look at me and they go, oh, well, Victoria, you know, why are you not responding to people emailing you about career information or helping them out? I mean, I get such a volume of requests yeah. now. I logged on to Instagram the other day and I had like a week old DM because I turned off my notifications because it's just too much. Mm-hmm. A week old DM that someone was like, oh, I'm an HIM student. Can I interview you for my class? Like if I'd have seen it, I'd have probably said yes.
Yeah.
But it's like lost in this flood. Like I want to help, but if I'm spending my time answering questions about people, oh, I want to become a medical coder. Can you help me out? Mm-hmm. I want to get the certification. Can you help me out? Do you have advice for this coding content? Like if I'm just doing that all day, I can't make new content to help
thousands
of people. And I feel like there might be a little bit of judgment out there, but I, you know, it's one of those things that you have to mentally get over.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just go out to, and I know this is an extreme example, but you can't go out to Tony Robbins and be like, hey, Tony Robbins, I bought your book. I need some help with my career path and my mentality. Can you advise me individually for free via email?
Right. Exactly. So the person asking, you know, yeah, I used to encounter a lot of that over the years. I don't get as much of it anymore. Because again, you start establishing boundaries and you give people mechanisms to communicate with you. You kind of determine how you get, you know, contacted. And then when you respond, like people, you know, will email questions. Again, this is cut down because of the policy, which is on my website when it comes to coding questions. Mm-hmm. I just have a quick question. Well, 100 other people could be emailing me with a quick question. So yeah. I'm taking all this time answering stuff for free and I can't do it. So when people say, you know, hey, can you answer this question? I say, this is the policy on the website to give, you know, advice. We have to have a contractual arrangement. You got to pay a fee. However, if you want to go over to the Facebook group here and post your question, other coders, you know, are over there. They can answer you. When I have time, when my schedule allows, I go over there and I answer. So there's a free mechanism to reach me. Yeah. Sometimes I'm not answering in that group for like a week or two because I'm not, again, I've set boundaries, you know, with my schedule. And I understand that people want access and they want information, but I would ask people to put yourself in the shoes of the content creator and think about all of the emails and all of the DMs that they get, you know, over the course of time. Would you want to spend your free time responding to all of those people and give up, you know, stuff that you're doing in your personal life? I don't think you would. Honestly, I don't even want to do it for money. If somebody paid me to sit there and do it, I would rather go be enjoying myself. There are some things that money isn't even going to make me do it. It's just a boundary that I've set and that's it.
Yeah. Like I could easily turn around to some of those people and say, hey, yeah, if you need individual mentoring or consulting, mm-hmm. I will pay you an hourly fee. And this is my hourly mm-hmm. fee, but that hourly fee would have to be a lot to compensate for the time that I'm losing in order to do it. It wouldn't be financially advantageous for them to pay. So unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, I just have to respond and go, you know, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I'm not providing individual consultations and one-on-ones at this time. And if I have a piece of content that I can direct them to that I'm like, oh yeah, this answers your question. Yeah, I do that. But you know, you have to set those boundaries. And I think a lot of people ask me too, like, why don't you do the whole medical coding course? Why don't you teach the whole CPC curriculum? I'm like, it would be a lot of boundary setting and a lot of work for me as a solo individual to have thousands of people going onto YouTube, typing in medical coding, finding Victoria and going, oh, Victoria, you're so wonderful. You're going to be my superstar medical coding teacher and you're going to answer all of my questions and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, to take that and go, okay, well, hold on now, because you have to learn medical terminology and you have to learn anatomy before you can even take medical coding. You know, I think it would just be a lot to navigate. To go, okay, well, first you have to do this and that. Well, are you going to teach me medical terminology? No, I'm not going to teach you medical. Like, I don't really want to teach med term.
Yeah.
And it would just be too much for one person to have to manage. Now, having said that, I think I am teaching. I'm working with one organization to do like classes or something short term over the summer as a part-time thing. So, you know, but to teach the whole CPC curriculum as someone who has the broad base of people flooding in is just, it's just too much to manage.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I see what other people are doing and what they're willing to do. And I think, oh my gosh, like how many hours a day are they working to do like what they're doing? I don't want to do that. I mean, you'd have to pay me an insane amount of money to get me to increase the hours that I work. Like, honestly, I mean, I don't even know what the number would be to get me back to a 40-hour work week. I don't think that there is a number because I don't want to work, you know, full-time hours. And so once you've made that transition, it's very difficult. But again, just to reiterate to people who are listening, it's not personal why people aren't responding to you. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, the volume of messages that people receive. You know, myself, one of the best things I ever did was podcast episode number 2. I was very intentional about it. Who wants to be an IR coder? Because you know how many people email me and ask me about getting into IR coding and all the questions that go along with CIRCC. Now, when they do that, I will respond and say, refer to the podcast and send them the link. So the podcast helps with some of that kind of general advice that people ask me for, like career-wise. But again, it's a time thing. And I, you know, people can think of it from the other perspective. Are they willing to give up time, you know, their quality time to sit and answer, you know, dozens of emails or 100 emails? Most people are not going to be willing to do that. So I would just, again, encourage people to think about it from the flip perspective. If you don't get an answer, also messages I sometimes never get, they go into the email black hole. Don't assume I'm ignoring you. If it's something significant, try to reach out to me another way, because I have people angry, like I'm ignoring them. And I'm like, I'm not ignoring you. This is the first I've heard about you or your question. You know, I would at least respond and tell you, this is my policy on answering questions. I at least give that. I never completely ignore messages. I will do a copy and paste of the policy if needed. So technology is so much fun. I have important stuff going to my spam folder that I can't get out of my spam folder. So always look there too, just in case. Okay. So let's talk about some fun things. I always like to wrap up with some fun questions. So what is your biggest professional pet peeve?
I think we touched on this a little bit, but I think one of my biggest
copying,
not the copying, but the people who are just trying to sell or talk about themselves. And that's all they're doing. Mm. It's sell, 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 me, not here's something to help you out. And, you know, if you've ever read the book, and I think this is so phenomenal, if you're anyone who's interested in being a content creator of any kind or working in your own business, Jab, 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 Right Hook by Gary Vaynerchuk, it talks a lot about how the best way that you can build your brand and your business and sell to people is by not directly selling to them, by saying, here's a piece of content that I made. Here's something to help you out. Here's something to help you out. Here's something to help you out. Oh, by the way, I also have this thing. So if you've liked the things that I've already given you, I have this paid product you can buy, which is how I've structured a lot of my business. You can go on YouTube and find a lot of the information I have for free. But if you want me to help you prepare for a credential, I also have this product, and that feeds into that. I make more money on paid courses than I do on my YouTube channel. So I think that's really it. The people that are just me, sell, like that. It just, I don't get it. Like, and even to that degree, like people will start a Facebook group. And it'll be, oh, I'm going to help you. This group is for people who do this specialty and we're going to help you out with this. But then all they do is just post about their products and services. Like that's a big pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, but so if you listen to like any of the experts out there who talk about content creation and building an audience on social media, whether it's LinkedIn or elsewhere, they all say the same thing, that you have to do free content and you have to build that relationship. You need to be giving, giving, giving in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, learn about you, they trust you. If you're just going out with an ask, you're not even really going to be successful with your ask. You might get something here or there, but the more you're giving, then when you have the ask and it's not constantly in their face, like on LinkedIn, when I go do it, I have like my Q&A Tuesday that I do and Coding Tip Thursday. And then all I do with that is in the post, the reference where it came from, which is my book. I'm not saying, hey, go buy my book, but this is the free information for you. It's coming from the source. And then if you, their link is there, if you want to go purchase it, that has actually helped me sell a lot of books. So I'm not directly selling it. Occasionally I'll make a post about the book, but it's things like that. So you're providing free, you know, content again, that gets eyes on you as well by providing the free content. What gets me is people, and I'm guilty of this sometimes myself, like doing, we connect and then I'll, hi, how are you? How can I help you? Blah, blah, blah. This is what I have to offer. So I'm kind of selling to you in mm-hmm. the initial, you know, post, but what I offer is a little bit different. What I find interesting is some people, some of the asks that they put in DMs and LinkedIn, like one person, don't know this person, never communicated with this person, sends me a DM like one day, didn't get it until later, so I couldn't have helped them anyway, but said, oh, I'm giving a presentation in an hour. Can you look at this for me? What? I'm like, I don't even know you. And yeah. If I had seen this in time, no, I wouldn't do that. That's not something that I'm going to do. Now, if it was a friend of mine, let's say Christine came to me and said, hey, Stacey, can you look this over, you know, quickly? Sure, Christine, I'll do that for you. You know, when you have that relationship of like give and take, she actually helped me out of a bind the other day with something that I needed like right away. Like in those instances, if you have an established relationship, you don't mind. But people, when they have asks or people will just DM me, oh, can you find me a job? Can you give me a job? Like nothing else. Wow. I'm like, that's really great. You know, etiquette there, at least when I'm selling you, telling you what I have, I'm also saying, if there's anything that I can do for you, please let me know. I'm extending some type of offer. And sometimes people ask me questions and I give them advice. I'll point them in a direction. But yeah, it's very interesting to be over there on LinkedIn. So I definitely agree. It's that giving back. And then again, it's like, but putting a limit on what you do for free as well, because you can't give everything away for free. Right. You know, you need to make a living, you need to make money. And for years, you know, earlier in my career, I did a ton of stuff for free, like constantly. And that when I was, that's when I was a crazy workaholic person. Mm-hmm. And then I look at how much time I spent doing free content and not really gaining a benefit from it and answering questions. And then, you know, when I'm reexamining my life and how I'm spending my time, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. So then I had to set those hard boundaries, because I could spend 20 hours a week giving free advice. I could, right. Honestly. And that's not where I'm at. I did it for a long time. And again, there are mechanisms out there. And you with YouTube, that's the perfect mechanism. You give so much great information completely free of charge. So when people want to complain about prices or charges on certain things that content creators offer, seriously, when you're getting stuff for free, you know, the benefit of their expertise, maybe you should purchase, you know, one of their premium, you know, products and support them. Or with your YouTube channel, would you say they can pay you $500, you know, if they feel like it?
Yeah. So,
I mean, just give Victoria $500 just for the heck of it, because you love her content so much. So, okay. So back to the YouTube, what is the, since they can give you up to $500, what is the largest like single like donation you've ever gotten that way, where it's just, they can just give you money? I'm curious.
Not that much. I think maybe like $10 or $20 in a one-time thing, but gotcha. They can subscribe to channel membership and give me up to like $10 a month. So, and then they can cancel this membership whenever they like.
Yeah. So we got to get you to the 500 like mark somehow, like some way, get people to give you $500 for your expertise. They don't even do it monthly. Once a year would be good, right? $500 right. for all the awesome content that you provide. I think it's definitely worth it for sure. Okay, so next question. What is your most embarrassing moment professionally?
Oh my gosh. So when I had one of my coding jobs, it was towards the end that I'm like, I need to get out of here. And I was moving into a senior coding position and I had submitted my 2 weeks notice. And this particular job, I had a boss who was very loud and very aggressive and would use the B word to describe herself. And she would she sat right in front of me in an open office and would have loud conversations with her kids, like screaming at them over the phone.
Wow.
So it was like my last day there and I was having a countdown. Like they purposely set me in an area where everyone could see what I was doing because their mindset was that because I was not coding surgeries as fast as E&M, that somehow I must be like screwing off all day. So they set me in a space where like everyone could see me coming off the elevator and stuff. So
wow.
It was my last day there. I was counting down and my new boss wanted to go over a couple of housekeeping things for when I start my new job. So she called me on my cell phone. And she's like, hey, Victoria, we're so happy to have you. We're going to put you in epic training. We're going to do this and you're going to do that. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited too. I'm so happy. I never took a break at this job. This is the first time I took a break and I took it at my desk. And my boss, red in the face, pissed off as anything. She's like, are you on the phone? I'm like, how many freaking conversations did I have to hear of you yelling at your kids right in front of me? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, are you on a break? And I'm like, yeah, I am on my break. And she stormed off and was like telling management, the upper management, what I was doing.
Wow.
And I finished up my phone conversation. They came over and they're like, excuse me, Victoria, your last day is going to end a little bit earlier than you thought because you're being very distracting. And it's distracting everyone around you. So we're going to need you to pack your stuff and get out.
Wow. Wow.
And it just so happened that I was being featured in a big marketing promotion for that healthcare organization. And I was supposed to go up to the marketing department that afternoon to look at the big video that they were producing that they had professionally done featuring me in this big makeover and put me on the cover of the network's magazine. So instead of packing up my stuff after they left, I walked up to the fifth floor to the marketing team. And I said, hey, guys, I know I was supposed to come up here earlier, but they told me I need to get the hell out of the building. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Victoria. They're like, well, let me show you what we've put together of the video. And they showed the little promotion that they put together. It was because I had weight loss surgery and they were doing a big, like, you know, makeover type thing. So they showed me the clips of the video and I'm like, oh, that's so amazing. And then I had to go back to my office and pack all of my stuff off and leave early. And most people didn't even get to say goodbye to me because I decided to get a little smart at the end there and take a phone call. And then they kicked me the hell out.
Talk about a person, your manager there, who has like zero self-awareness, like seriously. That's like amazing to me that she like behaved the way that she did. And then that one thing, that one time, yeah, decides to like go there, like with you, like that is just incredible to me. Absolutely incredible. So I'm going to share an embarrassing moment, okay, that I had when I asked Christine this question. I'm like, honestly, I cannot think of anything like professionally and I couldn't. And then after the interview, I'm like, I thought of something that happened to me like professionally that I wanted to share with the audience because I think this will give them a chuckle. So typically what I do whenever I start an online meeting is I actually keep it on mute until I'm ready to actually start talking. That way, you know, the audience can't hear anything that's going on if I have a phone call or whatever. And I talk to myself. That's the other thing. I'm alone all the time. I mumble to myself. I talk to myself. So I leave it on silent. Well, this particular day, I didn't. I left it open. I connected to the web meeting and left it open. And what had happened this day was I had an email exchange going on with the owner of the pool company that I had been utilizing. And I had emailed him to tell him that I was letting them go, that I was using another service. So he kept emailing me back wanting to know why I was canceling the service. To me, it's irrelevant. He doesn't need to know. And so while I'm waiting for this meeting to start, I read the latest email from him where he's still pressing at me. And I say out loud, how do you tell someone nicely that they're an a-hole? And then I happen to look over at the computer and I'm like, oh my God, there was one person connected to the meeting who heard this. And so I'm like, hello, I'm so sorry you had to hear that. Thankfully, it was only one person. And then after the meeting, I emailed her. I apologized again because she didn't laugh. Okay. Now me, if I had been her and I'd heard that, I would have been laughing hysterically. Okay. If I heard that. So I'm like, did I offend her? I said, and then email, she's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. But that I just wanted to crawl under the desk like when that happened because I didn't have it on silent. And again, talking to myself and there you go. So that was my embarrassing moment. So now I try to always make sure mute to make sure you're muted before you're ready. Yeah. So lesson learned. And then with the Zoom thing, this is another funny thing that happened recently. I thought this happened to me, but it didn't. It was a false alarm. I thought I had exposed my boob on a Zoom meeting. But thankfully, I did not. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, okay, come. Like, your camera's not on yet, Stacey. It didn't quite connect. I'm like, you're good. That would have been mortifying because I've heard some Zoom stories where there's a colleague of mine. He was doing a Zoom meeting, and not everybody dresses fully for Zoom meetings. I mean, they focus on what they look like from, you know, about the chest, like up, and that's it. And nobody pays any attention. So he was on this meeting with coworkers, and he said they asked him a question about something. And he's like, oh, let me go grab my book. So he stands up to grab the book off the shelf, and they're like, ooh, look at you. He's like, I'm in my undershorts. And they're like, oh, look at your sexy legs. So he got caught on Zoom in his like undershorts, which I thought was like hilarious. Like if you knew this person, that's what makes it even more hilarious that it happened to him. It was so funny. So yeah, things happen. And, but yeah, I did not expose myself on Zoom. Thank goodness. But I had a like panic attack, like majorly thinking it had happened. So we have to be careful with those things for sure. Okay. So a question I like to ask everyone that I talk to, even a meeting that I did that wasn't for my podcast, I asked this question on a panel of professionals because I always love the answers, is what is the funniest or oddest thing that you've ever read in a medical record?
You know, I don't know that I've had a ton of things that I've read in medical records that were so striking that I still can remember them. But you know, I had a physician that I used to work with. His name's Dr. Subio. You can follow him on Instagram. He's hysterical. He's a plastic surgeon. I coded for him. I've been a patient of his. He's on TikTok and he makes hysterical content. He's phenomenal. But I would sometimes find things in the medical record that I'm like, I think Dr. Subio literally wrote this in the record to write towards me. Or he would call me. He was the only physician that ever called me from within the operating room. And it was so wonderful because he's like, hey, Victoria, I'm about to go in and do this surgery. And this guy was working and he accidentally blew up part of his hand or something. And he's like, I'm going in doing this surgery and the general surgeon is going to harvest the omental flap and I'm going to inset the omental flap to cover up this damage on his hand. Is that a co-surgery? And I looked it up and I'm like, okay, yep, that's the same code. And you're both doing two separate parts of the same code. So it's going to be a co-surgery. And he's like, great, because I'm going to code it as a co-surgery. I'm going to submit it as a co-surgery. And I'm like, you actually got it right. Like so many physicians don't get co-surgery right. Like they think that because they're in there with another physician, it's a co-surgery. And it's a big explanation of no, for it to be a co-surgery for coding purposes,
right?
It has to be right. The same CPT code and you're both doing separate parts.
And co-surgery has to be allowed for the code. That's the other thing where yes. It's not allowed for some procedures. Yes.
Yes. So which I was like,
forget about
gold stars, but yeah, Dr. Subio and I used to just say kind of like off striking things to me and I would like mail him cookies in the mail. When I needed him to sign things, because he was always just behind on his documentation. And he was my one that didn't get things done on time. So we would screw around with each other. And he had the type of personality that you could do that with. But as far as medical records, a lot of, you know, misspelling-y things, a lot of things where you would read them and be like, what the heck does that say? And you'd realize it was some sort of odd pharmaceutical. But yeah, nothing honestly that strikes me too much as far as like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing I've ever read in a medical record.
I'm surprised that you don't have like a really great answer for that. I thought Victoria, she's going to have something really funny. She's going to have something really great. Did you happen to listen to Tony's episode and the answer that Tony gave for that question?
I was peeing my pants. That was so terrible.
That was pretty funny. I did not expect that for that question. That was like hilarious. I'm like, oh my goodness, that would actually happen. So
yeah,
I don't see a lot of interesting things in radiology these days. They're kind of boring. So I don't have anything new to share other than what I've shared in the past as far as that goes. But I've heard some really interesting stories over the years from people as far as what's in a medical record. Okay, let's see. I'll edit this out while I'm thinking. Okay, let's wrap up with this. I'm going to ask you this question, then I'll ask where they can find you online. So what is one question that you wish I had asked and how would you have answered? So this is your chance to leave the coding and HIM world with anything that you want them to know.
You know, an interesting thing came up recently when I was talking with my accountant and she was like, Victoria, what's your 10-year plan? And I'm like, wow, I don't know that I have a 10-year plan. And she's like, well, what about 5 years? And I said, yeah, I think I still want to grow my business, but I don't want to scale it to a point where I have people that I need to manage because I'm not good at managing people, not because I'm bad at it or don't want to do it. I'm just very flighty. So I will say to you like 100% like, oh yeah, I'll get back to you on that. And then I'll get distracted by something else and completely forget to even write down what I said I was going to follow up with you on. And that's not fair to people that I'm managing. It's not a good thing to do. But as I was thinking about it, you know, one of the things that I've been working on right now slowly over the past year has been writing a book. And the book isn't about medical coding. It's about me. It's kind of like, if you think about like, I've never read the book, but I imagine it's kind of like Girl Wash Your Face, but for like, not people who drink pumpkin spice lattes and wear boots, like a more badass type of girl latte thing.
You don't drink pumpkin spice lattes and do that stuff? That's not you. I never would have thought that. I figured you for that type. Not.
I do. I don't wear
boots. Not that there's anything wrong with that, to take a line from Seinfeld. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
But really talking about how I built myself from someone who like didn't do good in high school, dropped out of college, and then made such a success out of myself, and talk about some of the tactics that I used along the way. And, you know, it's always been in the back of my mind that I might not be in medical coding in 10 years, that there's a good chance I will, but my interests are kind of going elsewhere. And I see people out there, like, if you're familiar at all with Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income, his story is that he originally started working as an architect and then wound up losing his job when the big recession happened and wound up learning how to make income online and then built a podcast. And then the podcast was called Smart Passive Income. And it talks about how you can build businesses and how to run webinars and how to sell online products. And now even he has one physical product that's out there, but how you can do and market all of that and make income online being your own boss. And, you know, I could foresee that there might be a day where I might not work in medical coding anymore, that if I go so far down that wayside, that it's possible I might develop different interests from now and decide that while I stay in YouTube and marketing, that maybe I wind up picking up really well if I start a second channel. So that's the one question I think no one's really asked me is, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Are you still going to be, you know, doing medical coding and teaching courses? Possibly. I could maybe get sick of it and go back to teaching online, get a really good offer or something, but it's not entirely, I think, out of the spectrum that one day I might shift industries.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel the same way. I actually tried to shift out of healthcare about 7 years ago. I wanted to shift out of it. I wanted to do something different. And it just wasn't working the direction that I wanted to head. And then I felt like for now, like this is what I needed to do to stick with my business and grow it and develop it with the goal being that I want to have enough passive income coming in from this business where it's kind of like set it and forget it, that I can go do other things that I enjoy and then start working on building like another stream of income. So if I had a mechanism for making six figures, you know, today doing something else, I would be thrilled to never code another medical record again. And I know that that probably shocks people, but it's true. I've said that multiple times. If I never had to code another medical record again, if I had a great source of income, if I found something that gave me more income than this, I would probably drop this. Although part of me is like, well, if you have this online thing and if it keeps going and it's selling and it's either staying steady or it's growing, you should at least keep your foot enough in it to keep that going because it's easy money. So I would like to get to a point where I'm only doing like the online stuff with the passive income and not do any of the consulting, like doing the coding, the auditing, and just focus on the education piece. Because that's, as you know, that's the tedious stuff where you're stuck at your desk, you know, doing that. And that takes a lot of time. And, you know, when I do it, I get paid well for doing it, but it's just not, you know, where I want to be. So yeah, I want to go into a second career at some point. So I don't know, maybe I'll quote retire from this profession and do something else. Not anytime soon. I don't anticipate that happening for a while, but it's interesting that I find a lot of people come into coding for a career change or HIM for a career change where they've started in another field and then they've got that midlife career change and they come into it. But then I've seen a lot of people in healthcare who are working in it who midway through say, I want a career change. I want to go do something else. So you have people wanting to come in midlife. You have people wanting to transition, you know, out midlife. I find it very interesting. It's very, I'm just glad I don't work in a typical job as a production coder. Like I've never really held that role in any of the jobs that I've had of a production coder. I was really more of an auditor in most of my coding roles. And I can't even imagine sitting at a computer 40 hours a week and only coding records. Like that would never have worked for me at like any point in my career. Like when I was offered full-time coding positions, production coding, I would say no, I had zero interest in it, but I know that I had to do enough to learn the coding, to do auditing and education. But there are some people who love to sit behind a computer and not interact with people and code those records for 40 hours a week. I personally love the education, the interaction, and yeah, just the computer work doesn't really do it for me. So I don't know, maybe you and I will bump into each other like in our second careers when we're reinventing ourselves, but I don't really have a timeline on it. Like 10 years, okay, maybe in 10 years. In 10 years, I probably will be doing something else. It doesn't mean that I will have abandoned this, but I'm almost certain I'll be doing something in addition to this, like scale this back to where, again, it's just online and then I'm doing something else because I've been doing it since I was 18 years old and it's 30 years. And I can't believe I've been doing it, you know, that long. You've only got about half the time in the field, you know, that I do. So the fact that you're thinking about already doing something else, but I'm excited to see what you're going to do in the future. I'm excited to see if you're going to do a YouTube channel about being an entrepreneur. Like I'm excited to learn about your book. Like, see, that's amazing that you have all these things going on. I have a book idea that I'm going to put together. I think it was when I was on vacation, I came up with a bunch of great ideas. That's the nice part about unplugging is I'm like, oh, I have this idea, this idea, this idea. And then I'm like, how do I develop all this stuff and like get it like out? You know, that's my problem. Then the procrastination kicks in because I get overwhelmed at the steps of like producing all this content and these products and everything. So, but thank you so much for sharing with me today. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. We've been speaking for over 2.5 hours. So we didn't quite hit the 3 hours that Christine and I did, but we came close. So this is going to be a multi-part episode. But before we like wrap up, tell those listeners who don't know who you are and don't know how to find you, where can my listeners find you online?
Yeah, I'm not hard to find online. You can go in Google and just type in Contempo Coding or Victoria Mole CPC and stuff will come up. But my YouTube channel is called Contempo Coding. I publish every Tuesday and Thursday videos. I also do Ask Me Anythings. I have to find a new time for them because they're falling behind a little bit. And I'm on Instagram at Contempo Coding and on TikTok as well. So on lots of different social media.
So I'm going to ask you one last question since you mentioned TikTok. So what kind of content are you putting on TikTok, since that's obviously very different from the other social media platforms? I see what Brian Quee puts on TikTok, his goofy little videos. I'm not on TikTok, so unless you share it on another platform, I'm not going to see it. So what do you put on TikTok?
Some of them are goofy videos. Some of them are answering questions. Someone asked one day, what do medical coders wear? So I responded in a video and I'm like, well, most of us wear pajamas and sweatpants working from home. I said in the office, I used to wear, you know, business casual. There are some people that wear scrubs. But yeah, I try to copy off of whatever the current TikTok trend is and try and figure out how I can twist that into medical coding somehow. Or I make videos that are just kind of funny medical coding things, like about how your dust always falls out when you open up your new CPT book, or about, you know, how frustrating it can be learning medical coding and all the different books and stuff. So some of it is just very, you know, humorous content.
So you need to share your TikTok stuff on other social media platforms so I'll see it. Because when I think about adding another social media account, I'm like, I don't even use Instagram. I signed up and I have an account and I've never used Instagram. I'm a Facebook, LinkedIn person. So I haven't been convinced to make the leap. So let me ask you then, this will be my last question and then we will wrap up. As far as all the social media platforms are concerned, obviously YouTube is where you spend the most time and effort. Yeah. But aside from that, what do you think is the best social media platform out of the others for content creators? What's your opinion on that?
It depends on what you're doing. So Facebook will definitely reach the largest audience and will have better monetization than something like TikTok. So you can make TikToks and gain audience like nobody's business, making engaging or funny or humorous content, trending things. You can build a lot of viewership that way, but they don't always follow you onto other platforms. Right. And there's not a lot of ways to monetize on TikTok. So I think Facebook will reach a really broad audience and you can market more towards them for the people who are interested in purchasing some of your products.
Do you do any paid advertising on Facebook at all?
No.
No?
And you know what? I shouldn't say that. I think once... right around October, I did a Facebook promotion, I think, for the turkey tea that I sell. So I have some medical coding related merchandise and stuff. So I think I did one promotion for the merch once and that's it. I don't promote via paid ads for anything.
Interesting. The t-shirt would make sense. I could see where that would work. I used to do, when I first had the online course in the book, I used to do Facebook ads and I actually would get conversions from a Facebook ad, like initially. But then Facebook changed things over time where you used to be able to reach a lot of people for a little bit of money. Then they've changed things where you have to spend more money to reach the same amount of people. So they keep, like, you know, moving that up. And so I just stopped because then I wasn't even getting the reach and the return on investment. So, and then Facebook, with it just choosing with the algorithm what shows in someone's feed. I mean, even stuff that I post in my Facebook groups doesn't even get to people. Like, it doesn't even show up there. So they want you to pay for your existing people to see your stuff. Like if you have a page, I don't know if you have a business page for Facebook, but people can like your page and then you put a post on there and then maybe 20 people will see it because they want you to pay to get your page people, you know, to engage with it. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. So
yeah. And the unfortunate thing is that you can't target it, I think, very well to specifically medical coders. It's like either age groups, genders. Sometimes you can target like healthcare in general, but you can't target down that far for the advertisements.
Yeah. As far as I could go with targeting is you could tag organizations like AAPC, AHIMA, if they, you know, liked that kind of page or a member of the group, but beyond that, you're right. It's very broad to do that. I've actually found for a while, I put a lot of effort on Facebook and I did well on Facebook for a while. And then the past 2 years, I spent more time on LinkedIn and I actually get more business through LinkedIn than I do from Facebook. So it's actually kind of flipped, but then I never spent time on LinkedIn like before, like either. So that's just something that I've noticed. So again, Victoria, thank you so much for taking time out. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I have learned so much. Definitely about lighting for sure. I'm going to work on that, getting better lighting for myself. And I look forward to your book coming out. That's exciting. I definitely I'm looking forward to reading that. And so do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, don't forget to check out Contempo Coding on YouTube. I publish every Tuesday and Thursday. And yeah, check out the TikTok if you're on there as well. There's some really cute, funny videos that I make.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That concludes my three-part series with Victoria Moll of Contempo Coding. Victoria, if you are listening, thank you so much for giving so much of yourself for my audience, and thank you for the boost in podcast ratings. Much appreciated. As always, I want to thank all of my listeners. If you are enjoying the podcast and you listen on Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to give the podcast a 5-star rating and leave a review. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you have feedback you'd like to share on an episode or a topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx: Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.